Welcome, lucky listeners. Grab yourselves a hot cup of... Tuck yourself down deep into the covers and make sure the lights are on. It's time for Read Me a Nightmare.
Welcome to episode 25 of Read Me a Nightmare. I'm Angelique Fons, and we are doing something very special with this episode. This is our first ensemble cast performance. I can't tell you how lucky I am to have the privilege to call all these incredible talents my friends. Performing this short multi-POV Pulp Fiction noir story, A Time to Forget, written by Angelique Fons, in order of appearance we have Kelly Pigeon as Frank, Karen Shute as Betty, Christy Stewart as Honor, Brooke St. Ange as Isla, Luke Fons as Angus, Rachel Luttrell as Emily, Peter Ruprecht as Dave, and Bill Wisner as Samar. A Time to Forget was originally published in 2019 in Pulp Modern Tech Noir. Stay tuned after the reading for an interview with Pulp Modern creator Alex Cizak. He's a writer and filmmaker from Indiana, and he gives some interesting advice to writers about the world of pulp and noir fiction. So, let's turn off our AI spy cameras and dive into A Time to Forget. Frank, the CFO.
Frank looked over the stunning vista of the connected colony's capital city while standing on the roof of his condo building. It was a premium address for those with top social credits and high income right at the lake. The sun was coming up and the ripples of the water looked like a magical dance floor of twinkling fairies. Since when did he wax so poetic? He was a numbers guy. He put his hand to his head and bumped it a few times. His memory was failing him. When he tried to recall simple things like what he ate for lunch, there was nothing. Renegade websites created buzz about the link between new cell phone technology and Alzheimer's, but people loved their devices. Besides, there was no proof, right? The Corp made sure of that. He closed his eyes, took a deep breath, and enjoyed the crisp tang of the air. The city was clean and quiet at this time of day. Perhaps 30 years ago, there would have been garbage blown in the gutters, drunks sleeping it off on the park benches, and a few heroin-addicted hookers cashing in on early morning trades. Thanks to the Corp and its authoritarian methods mixed with socialism and a social credit system, many of the old problems were abolished, or at least controlled. I used to be so proud of being the CFO of the Corp. How could I have been so stupid? He'd been researching tech history for a town hall company meeting. That's when he found the top secret documents. They detailed buried research on cognitive issues being linked to mobile devices. So he downloaded the files quickly onto a zip drive and mailed it to his niece before he could change his mind and rationalize the deceit. She was his only living relative, and he wasn't really close to her. In fact, he hadn't seen her since she was a little girl, even when she'd reached out a couple of years ago. He was incredibly busy and never got around to returning her texts or calls. Now, he and his brother were estranged and hadn't talked for years. He hadn't even made it to the funeral when his brother and his wife were involved in that fatal hover car crash. That was an asshole move to me. Why hadn't I tried to meet her, especially after her parents died? Too late now. Taking another deep breath, he looked at the fairy dance floor, took a few steps back, then launched himself off the roof.
Betty, the scientist.
Betty woke up on the street, lost and confused. It was cold, but she had a warm coat on. Pulling it close around herself, she shook her head, trying to clear the fog from her brain. A large venting outtake blew warm air underneath her, from the building she was leaning against. She whispered to herself as she pulled herself up off the ground and looked around. My name is Betty, and I know an important secret. What was that thing she had to tell people about? Something about smartphones and radiation? Then the thought slipped out of her brain before she could finish it. She wasn't quite sure where she was, but she knew she was doing something crucial. Something that might change lives. She had been a lead researcher at the Corp, but had been offered early retirement. She had started making noise about the fears she had. Running her hands down her body, she noticed this warm coat had pockets. Sticking her freezing fingers in them, she pulled out a cell phone. On the screen, there was a big notification. Lost? Call this number first. 416-555-6781. Betty put the phone back in her pocket. She wasn't lost. She was on a mission. Brushing off the dirt on the seat of her flannel pajama bottoms, she took a look around at the deserted street and tall buildings. The sun was just rising up in the east over a big, gorgeous lake. Was it the ocean? No, she was pretty sure it was a lake. Just what was it called? She was going to be late for work. She was a scientific researcher. She wasn't sure where the office was, but a coffee would fix the fuzz in her brain. She started walking away from the water. Oh, what was she looking for again? She was chilly and hungry. Oh, what a beautiful old building up ahead. She stopped to gaze at the old stone and stained glass window. Faded letters spelled out, "The Cathedral Church of St. James." Pushing on the old wooden doors, they opened and she walked into the enormous building. The light trickling through the colored glass took her breath away. She couldn't see anybody around, so she went to one of the long wooden benches and laid down for a nap.
Honor, pleasure provider.
Honor looked up at the ceiling, muttering, "Oh yeah, baby. That's great." She was counting the thrusts of her early morning client, hoping he would hurry up so she wouldn't be late for class. Working as a legal prostitute wasn't a great choice for a part-time job, but she could make the most amount of money in the least amount of time. Plus, the hours were flexible enough for school. Her parents died in a car crash a year ago, just as she was finishing high school. Unfortunately, her dad had been more concerned with creating art pieces than saving money. He dreamed of becoming a renowned and rich creator of selfie environments. This art phase started about 20 years ago and had become a mainstay for museums in every metropolitan city. But sadly, he remained a starving artist. They subsisted off of her mother's construction worker paychecks, enough for the basics. But her mom had two dependents. They lived hand to mouth. Honor tried to get in touch with her rich Uncle Frank, the CFO of the corp. She hoped he could help her cover university tuition, but he never returned her texts or calls. A package arrived that morning with a little zip drive in it from him, but she hadn't had a chance to look at it yet. She didn't need data files. She needed corp coin. When Dave was done, he hopped off of her and threw his jeans and t-shirt on. Honor knew he was married and loved to complain that his wife didn't get him. She didn't like Dave's uber male persona and felt sorry for his wife. But his digital currency was as good as any, and he passed all the state-mandated health standards. When he left her apartment, she went to the window and looked down at the early morning view. She saw a lady wandering down the street, looking like a toddler, not sure which direction her feet were going to take her, pausing to catch her balance. From her fifth-floor apartment, she couldn't make out her age, or if she was in trouble. She thought about running down to see if she could do anything, but by the time she got dressed and hit the streets, the woman would probably be out of sight. Anyways, this new and modern city had cameras everywhere. A patrol would pick her up. Honor sighed. The momentary distraction of the confused walker left her to confront how she always felt after a session with a client. Self-revulsion choked her. She needed money, but didn't she also need her soul? Every time she let some stranger climb into bed with her, she felt as though a piece of her died.
Isla, rescue worker.
Isla started her shift at 7 a.m. and was scanning through security cam notifications when she saw one marked urgent. She opened the webcam and saw the older woman walking on the sidewalk in the business district in a jacket, pajamas, and slippers. Every few minutes, she would stop and look around. Finally, she walked into the historical building that used to be an old church before the majority of the population had abandoned organized religion. Probably a dementia case who wandered away from home, Isla opened a dialogue box and sent out a request to have her picked up. At least she could be safe and warm in the old cathedral until a patrol could reach her. Homelessness used to be rampant, but real progress had been made in the last 20 years. Isla worked in the social services division of the Corps and kept an eye on the city, sort of a preventative 911 service. Isla logged on to her social media site on homepage and posted, "Another woman will sleep in a warm bed tonight because of the Corps' vigilance." She posted almost every work accomplishment and personal activity on her feeds. Homepage was her personal Bible, journal, and most important, communication tool. Though she had several thousand online friends, a breeze of loneliness was always drafting over her. Isla didn't see any new alerts on her cameras, so she opened her Core Love Connections app to reread some messages from Samar. She had a real-world date tonight with him. Actual, live, human interaction could be the cure to her blues. They both swiped right a couple of weeks ago. They texted and chatted like they'd known each other forever. Samar regaled her with the intense tales of his homeland, India. She especially loved the stories he told of spirituality and how they practiced the Hindu religion. He defected here on a business trip a year ago and would have loved to find a girlfriend to settle down. His own goddess, Parvati.
Angus, the paramedic.
Angus was startled awake by his automatic blinds at 7:30 a.m. They flapped up at the same time every day. He should have been used to it. He had not slept well, dreaming about the confused lady he had picked up yesterday from downtown Core. She was suffering from delusions and may have been schizophrenic.
Don't abduct me! I don't want to be prodded by aliens again!
The memory of her voice careened around in his head, and he wanted to bury into his covers and not get up. The in-house artificial intelligence, Arissa, winked its red camera eye from the ceiling above his studio's front door.
You have slept for 5 hours and had 3 REM disruptions. Your blood pressure and pulse are elevated, Angus. Plus, it seems you drank enough alcohol to breach the maximum allowable amount last night when you had me offline.
Angus took a deep breath. Morning, Arissa.
You should not be drinking quite so much. You are in hypertension stage 1. You have a 3.54% greater chance of having a heart attack. Based on you being informed, your health insurance will be void if you have a cardiac episode today.
Angus rolled out of bed, trying not to grab his head and give away the fact that he had a pounding headache. Thanks, Arissa. I'll be skipping my CrossFit workout this morning. Nothing to worry about. Glorious day.
Angus, don't try and distract me with the weather. I am concerned. If you continue to drink more than the maximum allowable amount of alcohol, you will be remanded to a treatment center. You are also losing a social credit for every poor beverage choice.
Angus pulled on his standard white uniform and got ready to pick up his first client. He tried not to be too irritated by the loss of social credits. This was a system originally used in communist China in the early 2000s. High social credit ratings helped you get upgrades in your vehicles, housing, and entertainment vouchers. Got it, Arissa? No drinking tonight. Put yourself on privacy setting, please.
As you wish.
Emily, the wife.
The minutes couldn't tick by fast enough. Emily was meeting her lover. Just because her lover happened to be a woman made everything a bit more exciting. Her husband, Dave, was so crass, so rough. And Darlene was the opposite. Soft hands, soft voice. She loved being with her. She rushed out of the office as soon as it was quitting time. She worked the night shift at the Corp, creating clickbait lists. Without looking, she charged across the exercise path, her sights set on the coffee shop across the road where they always started their rendezvous. Just a couple of ladies having cappuccinos.
Hey, Chubb, get out of the way, you pasty puff.
The cyclist was powering down the path, using rage to fuel his locomotion. Emily jumped out of the way, shocked at the insult. Chubb? Pasty puff? She was a perfectly normal-looking 40-year-old woman. A few extra pounds, maybe, but really not that. God, she hated men. At least, some men. Pushing through the doors of the coffee shop, She saw Darlene at their usual table and was so happy to see her that she couldn't resist leaning in for a quick kiss. Those lips and blonde hair, she was so beautiful. Too bad she didn't notice the nosy fellow at the next table surreptitiously take a photo and post it on his public feed. When she got home, her husband was waiting, and he was not happy.
Dave, the husband.
Do not leave your unit, Dave Trumbull. The Corps Patrol have been notified and will be around to pick you up for questioning. Domestic violence is strictly forbidden.
The Arissa in his apartment winked its red eye and informed him in her melodious voice. Dave picked himself up from the couch he collapsed on after giving his wife a quick crack to the face. He couldn't believe he did it. His insides were so full of burning rage. His skin was cooking on his hot bones. Emily cheated on him. Some distant cyber friend of his snapped a photo of two hot lesbians at a cafe, and he recognized his wife. He and his buddies back in college used to joke about how great it would be if their girlfriends wanted to get it on with another girl. Now that he was living it, it wasn't great at all. Maybe if he hadn't found out, along with the rest of the world, on social media, he would have reacted differently. Even worse, the condo AI caught his little slap to her face, and now there was clear evidence he had hit his wife. He activated his iris and called his lawyer. Chuck, hello? Yeah, I saw the post on homepage. Yeah, that's what I'm calling about. I may have given her a little love tap when she came by the apartment this morning. Dave listened for a bit. His lawyer explained to him that he wouldn't be going to jail. First-time offenders get rehabilitation services, counseling, and a fee punishment. The anger management classes are held at old churches. Since historical buildings are no longer used for weekly worship sessions, they have been retrofitted as community classrooms. This system lessened repeat behavior and actually helped people get better, rather than locking them up with criminals who either abused them or taught them how to be better criminals. Thanks, Chuck. Can you meet me at Corps Patrol Processing? I'm pretty sure I'm going to be picked up shortly and brought there. Okay, see you soon.
Samar, the counselor.
Samar drove around with Angus in his hovercraft when they saw a new alert pop up from headquarters. Victim of domestic abuse needed help. Counselors often rode with the paramedics, and this was an incident that needed a sympathetic ear even more so than medical intervention. They drove to the reported area and saw a woman walking quickly down the sidewalk, sobbing and holding her hand to her head. They pulled over, and Samar got out with a blanket and started talking to her in a soothing voice. Ma'am, we are here to help. Could you stop for a minute and let me render aid? Samar gently laid the microfiber heating sheet on her, and she turned and cried into his shoulder. There was something about Samar's kind demeanor that inspired trust. Angus stood back and dropped his mouth in shock.
It's you, the lady on the path. Are you okay?
Samar gently removed Emily's hand from a very black and swollen eye. She shook her head and didn't seem to recognize Angus as the fellow bellowing names at her earlier in the day. Samar took her other hand and put a mug in it filled with hot chocolate and a mild sedative. He defected from India just a year ago. The streets were clean, and there was almost 100% employment in this new land. But it lacked the color and passion of his home country. India was full of prayer, poverty, celebration, overpopulation, and lots of life. Samar was willing to accept 24/7 monitoring and stop practicing his Indian religion for the chance to send desperately needed money back to his family. What's your name, love? Samar asked the woman as he helped her get into the van. She stopped crying and looked over at Angus.
Pasty Puff, apparently. But when I'm not being screamed at by a mad cyclist, I go by Emily.
I'm sorry that happened with my co-worker. Perhaps he needs sensitivity training. Where is your husband now? Samar asked.
He's in our apartment, and I don't blame him, really. Who wants to see their wife making out with another woman over coffee on the internet? I hear my post is viral.
Samar sat down beside her in the hover van. Yes, your information file included that. We will take you for processing and then get that eye looked at by a doctor. Do you have any family you can stay with?
Only my grandparents, Betty and Daryl Bullmeister. But my grandmother is in the early stages of Alzheimer's. I'm not sure if my grandfather can handle another body in the house.
Betty, the scientist.
Betty sat on a couch in central processing with a nice warm drink in her hand. The taste was so familiar. She remembered it from childhood. What was it called? She usually liked it with marshmallows. Oh yes, hot choco. She loved hot choco. Why was she here?
Grandma, how are you? Oh my goodness, are you okay?
A lovely lady with red hair and a swollen black eye hugged her. What a wonderful smelling lady. And the warm arms around her neck felt comforting. I'm fine, just remembering what it was like worshiping at a church. I have very clear childhood memories. But what happened to you, dear? Who are you, and why is your eye all puffed up like that?
Grandma, it's me, Emily. Dave and I had a fight. I heard they found you on the street. Apparently you were going to work in your pajamas. Trying to smooth Betty's rumpled hair.
I have some very important information, dear. It's about people's safety. I just need to remember. I must get there now. If you will excuse me, I have to find headquarters. A frown creased Betty's face as she got up and headed for the door.
Sit back down for a minute, Grandma. Do you recognize me? Emily, your granddaughter. Emily gently took her elbow.
I'm not old enough to have grandkids, dear, and I do have to be getting to work.
Emily looked at her grandmother in frustration as she guided her back down to the seat. She reminded herself it's not Betty's fault she can't remember things.
Oh, yes, this is a really nice drink. Betty took a sip of the hot chocolate she'd rediscovered in her hand. It was my favorite as a child, with marshmallows.
Samar came over and joined Emily and Betty with a warm smile. He asked Emily to walk into a little room with him and invited her to sit in an armchair. Betty won't be going home, Mrs. Turnbull. We found her lost on the streets 3 times. 3 is the magic number. Now she's going to one of our special facilities for society members with dementia. Corp Care Town is really amazing. Samar popped open a laptop and showed her a digital pamphlet. It is set up as an old-fashioned town, and patients live in a non-confrontational, safe environment. We don't force them to confront reality. Instead, we let them enjoy their delusions and beliefs. Can you help us gather memorabilia, photos, some of her favorite stories for us? We will decorate her house with them to help as memory triggers.
A look of relief crossed Emily's face. Of course I can. There have been reports about how highly successful your treatment towns are. I'm looking for a new job, and I wouldn't mind working where my grandmother's going. Working with people who can't remember the latest homepage feed update may be a refreshing change.
There is a retraining program available, and elder care is a growing segment of the economy. Let me see if I can get you hooked up. Part of the reason I left India for the Connected Colonies is the 100% employment stats of those that can work.
You came from India? Wow. I've seen crazy footage online and on the news stations. So polluted. So many sick and unemployed. But the culture seems vibrant and gorgeous, Emily said, happy to focus on someone else's story.
Yes, my people are fascinating, amazing, and free. But here in the Connected Colonies, there is next to no pollution, very little crime, and everyone has a job and is taken care of. The lack of privacy takes getting used to, but I think personal privacy is a price we are willing to pay for safety and opportunity. At least that is a price I was willing to pay, Samar said.
Honor, pleasure provider.
Computer coding and technological sciences was a great choice for future employment prospects, but could be mind-numbingly boring to learn. Honor staggered back into her apartment and collapsed on her couch. What she really wanted was a glass of wine. But the in-house Arisa monitored everything consumed, and she didn't want her social credits or health statistics to be affected. Instead, she brewed some mint tea and finally slipped the zip drive from her Uncle Frank into her home computer. Oh my God! What was this? It looked like a report on how the radiation from the new super-powerful smartphones was causing cognitive failure. Dementia numbers were rising in the population. Honor loved reading all the latest scientific articles that popped up on her feeds, as she never had heard a peep about this. How many hours a day did she have her phone glued to her head? It even stayed tethered to its charger on her bedside table. She was moving that to another room post-haste. Could this be true? She had seen all the ads for Corp Care Towns. The date on this research was a couple of years old. There must have been a cover-up in action. The Corp made, sold, and created all content for smartphones. Someone at the Corp might have found the zip drive interesting. Somebody might have been willing to pay her a good amount of money to give it back and stay silent. A smile slowly spread across her face. She was going to call all her clients and tell them she was retiring. Then she was going to set up a meeting at the Corp. She was going to be rich. At least for as long as her memory lasted.
Thank you for listening. I'm hoping to expand on the adventures of all the characters you met today in future episodes of Read Me a Nightmare. If you were intrigued, please listen to episode 24 to learn more about Honor. Now let's chat with Alex Czak. Hello, everyone. I'm here today with Alex Czak, and he is someone I met when I wrote one of my first pulp fiction stories, A Time to Forget, and he published it in Pulp Modern, Tech Noir.
Well, where do we start?
Let's talk about Pulp Modern and what sort of fiction you look for and how it all came about.
Well, Pulp Modern started in, I started it in 2011. I'd done All Due Respect, which was an online crime fiction journal. And it catered to hardcore crime fiction, which now has become taboo, according to the gatekeepers in crime fiction. Back then, it was still acceptable. I really wanted to do a...
Sorry, let's stop a bit. I want to delve into this a bit. So what defines taboo?
Well, this is an indie crime fiction. And there's just a small group of what I call new Puritans. I have friends who work in law enforcement, and they tell me stories about what they see on the job. And crime fiction... Even the greatest crime fiction has never really come close to capturing the absolute horror of real crime. Bad things happen to people, and nastiness doesn't stop to check what your immutable characteristics are. So you have now these new Puritans. They say, well, nothing bad can ever happen to your women characters, which is ludicrous. That's not the way the world works. So if you're going to write, you know, realistic crime fiction, stuff like that is going to happen. But that is slowly being pushed out. I'm kind of finished with crime fiction because I don't think that it's being very honest these days. In 2011, going back to Pulp Modern, I wanted to put out a print journal, and I wanted to put out a journal that included all the pulp genres. I like all the pulp genres for the most part. I like crime, obviously, and horror and science fiction and some fantasy. I'm not huge on fantasy, but I appreciate it. And westerns.
How would you define the term noir? This is something in my writing group we are all discussing. What exactly is noir fiction?
Noir to me, I get asked that, and I always have to struggle. I think that noir is, for me, it's about people overwhelmed, individuals overwhelmed by what we might call for generic purposes, the system. So there is a kind of a, and this is just life. Life is dog eat dog. It's a jungle. That's we're so affluent and comfortable in the United States. We tend to forget that most people in the world are scratching just for something to eat. And so everything is kind of Darwinian. And in that process, systems are created to protect the people who have the power, protects their power. It's a very small group of people. The rest of us, you know, we have to struggle to put food on our table and whatnot. And sometimes that struggle becomes overwhelming. And that's when we make bad decisions. What we might say are bad decisions. In my own life, when I was younger, I made a lot of those bad decisions. And when I made those decisions, I didn't think they were bad. I was just doing what needed to be done. So noir is the individual breaking the collective's rules in order to survive.
I like that. Okay, that makes sense. An individual who breaks the collective's rules in order to survive. Yeah, that sounds good. I'm going to share that with my writing group. So what's the plan for Pulp Modern? What's coming up next?
Pulp Modern, right now, what we're doing is we're doing exclusively one genre for the time being. So the next issue is horror. That's coming out in October.
And is that still open for submissions or is it closed now?
Oh, that's closed. That's
long
on the,
closed October, yeah, right?
Yeah. Richard is finalizing the format on that and everything. The next issue will be all science fiction. And I can tell you now, so we do a 1-day submission window that keeps everything nice and tidy. So that will be April 1st, and it's not an April Fool's joke. It'll be April 1st, 2023.
April 1st, 2023. All right. Wait. I have a blog where I feature calls as well, so I'll make sure I have that one promoted
great.
For you.
Yeah, and we're looking for science fiction and really pulpy science fiction. You know, I'm interested in, I really like stories about space travel. That's just to get that out, that's a big hint right there.
Space travel, pulpy sci-fi. Travel. All right.
Right, and a lot of people want to write overtly political stories. And it's okay. I've been through that phase where the Rod Serling influence hasn't quite rubbed off yet.
Right.
But my advice is to tell the story first. So if you have a concern, like your concern is the environment, right? You are active, fighting for the environment. That concern will come through without you consciously trying to do it. So we can tell, when you hear a lot of people complain, they talk about quote unquote woke bullshit. It's because the writers started out saying, we're going to write about this, instead of saying, we're going to write a story. And who you are as a person, that always comes out. And I notice in revision in my stories, I start to see, oh, this is what I was thinking about when I wrote this. So then in revision, I can kind of tailor things to, because you don't want to, I don't like stories that lead the reader by the nose.
Right. Everybody likes to be hammered on the head, especially nobody. I find preachy stories, right? You don't want to be preached to. You're there to be entertained, maybe learn, but you don't want to be preached to.
Just write the story. Write the story, and who you are will come out in the story.
That's very good advice.
Well, you asked about Uncle B Publications. That's my imprint.
Right, right. Okay.
Yeah, so we've published about, I think, a dozen books or so, 10 that are still in print. But we're filling our slate for 2023, and I'm really interested in publishing. I want to publish writers that other publishers are afraid to publish. I'm also part of a group called the Independent Fiction Alliance. And this is one of the things we're working on, is figuring out how to get around Amazon KDP. So that's a long-term mission. But Anybody who's interested, you can go to independentfictionalliance.com. In fact, I have a nice IFA cup here.
Nice. Well, send me that link too. After we're finished the interview, send me a bunch of links or anything you want me to feature in the show notes. Now,
okay.
Thank you for coming today. And anybody who's interested in some of the intriguing and interesting things Alex has had to say, look at the show notes. Any final words for our listeners?
Don't be afraid to read books that are scary, that look scary to you for whatever reason. In fact, if it looks scary to you, it's probably a good reason to read it.
Don't be afraid to do the scary stuff. I love that. I think that's a great note to end this interview on.
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Alex. This is great. And hopefully we can work together in the future.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for talking to me.
Thank you for listening and stay tuned for more dark adventures of our noir cast of characters. If you want to keep in the loop, sign up for my newsletter at www.fonz.ca. Sleep with your lights on until the next episode of Read Me a Nightmare.